The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
We have about 30 minutes with Andisa West, and we're going to tighten the program this morning. Thank you so much, Andisa, for coming back.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Oh, of course, yeah. And then next week, Friday. Brace yourself, eh? Clear your schedule.
Yes, yes, yes.
Tell Mr. Andy's OS, whoever, brace it. Mommy, Dad, whoever it is,
yeah.
Brace yourself.
Yeah.
She's on the radio on a Friday mornings, and we're talking law and various aspects. Today, we're discussing domestic law. What is domestic law?
Yes, so we're talking about domestic violence. So, I just want
to... domestic violence with the law. Right.
Yes. So, we had the Domestic Violence Act that was created in 1999. But I want to know that 2020 in Trinidad and Tobago was a very amazing year. As it relates to gender-based violence, because firstly we had the gender-based violence unit, and then we also had the Domestic Violence Amendment Act, and that particular amendment kind of widened what would be covered under the definition of domestic violence. So just to start off the conversation, it includes things like physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional and psychological abuse, as well as financial abuse. So this amendment didn't only widen the definition of domestic violence, it also widened the individuals who could make an application for a protection order. And we know what a protection order essentially is, where you go to the court and you said, well, hey, I have been experiencing these different types of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
I need some type of protection against this person. And the court could order that the person stay away from the person, stop doing this, take down pictures if the person posted pictures of the individual, etc. So now, it includes persons in a domestic relationship, including a dating relationship. So even if you were dating a person for, and it isn't a restriction on the length of time that you had to be dating, if you were dating a person for a day, and after a day the person become extremely violent, you could go before the court and say, I was in this dating relationship with this individual. Person has now become abusive towards me. I need a protection order against them.
What? That is the amendment now?
Yes, yes.
I want to understand, if you're dating anybody out there who are aggressive, call Miss Wesser. She will be ready to take your case before the magistrate.
Yeah.
So so there's no stipulated time frame. So the Domestic Act is now for persons who are dating.
Who are dating.
We're not even together.
Yeah, even if you were in a visiting relationship, before it was cohabitation or relationship and there was a specific time period. So now it includes dating. It also includes a visiting relationship, cohabitational, a mother, a father, a sister, a brother. All of that is covered by the Domestic Violence Act and the Amendment Act.
What's a visiting relationship, though?
So essentially, you know, in Trinidad and Tobago, based on our history as well, you may be with this person for years, but they live one place, you live another place, and you visit each other occasionally. It also covers that. So it doesn't have to be a hard and fast that you have to be living with this person.
It's no longer cohabited.
Yes, it covers cohabitation and relationship as well. But we recognize that in Trinidad and Tobago, so we need to also cover and protect these persons who would be in these types of relationships as well.
Wow, so the Domestic Violence Act broadens.
Yeah, and just to note, I know we are kind of touchy with this in Trinidad, but it also doesn't, for the dating relationship at least, specify that it has to be a heterosexual relationship. So if you are in a gay relationship, you can also go to the court and ask for protection order against that person for a dating relationship.
We wouldn't recognize gay marriages in this country.
No,
that is not legal.
No,
but if you're in a gay relationship, you are covered under the Domestic Violence Act.
Yes.
When was it amended? In 2020.
In 2020
under the PNM government.
Yeah.
All right, they amended this act to include, and it is now inclusive of all these different facets of relationships and situationships that people find themselves in.
Yeah, because we have seen the amount of persons who have fallen victim to domestic violence. We have seen the deaths that occurred. So the act, I think, was very forward-thinking. So in my head, I feel as though we have a really good legal platform to stand on. Sometimes the issue would be implementation, where, you know, we have all these laws. Does the police officers know that these things exist? And when you go to a police station, are you actually getting the redress that you're required? Because, I mean, you can go for a protection order, but separate and apart from that, if someone is beating you mercilessly, that's also an assault. So that's also a criminal offense against an individual, and the police should take action as well. So it's really and truly a matter of implementation in my head. And I know we recognize and we often highlight domestic violence against women. But when our men go to a police station and they are reporting being abused by a woman, we know how the reaction could be sometimes in the police station. Yeah. So sometimes I note that even though we recognize that one in three women experience domestic violence, the reason why we probably aren't seeing as much statistics for men is because it's probably underreported, because they don't necessarily feel safe going to a police station and reporting that they are being abused.
You know, I don't want to turn this into a mental kind of topic, because we are dealing with the law mm-hmm. that impacts upon us in Trinidad and Tobago. But this inclusivity of the 2020 Amendment Act mm-hmm. with this domestic violence law speaks. You mentioned something just now mm-hmm. that I feel it will be remiss if we don't go back to it. When these laws are amended,
yes.
What actions, as far as you know, from the judicial part of things, mm-hmm. are taken to get this information transcended down to the law enforcement officials who are there to ensure law and order?
Right. So I think that we sometimes have an issue with implementation, but I will note that, at least in my experience, the judicial officers are often very amazing as it relates to dealing with protection orders, when you petition the court for a protection order, etc. And I would also want to note, if you feel as though you aren't receiving the recourse that you are asking for, there are also mechanisms in place to deal with that. So you could firstly go to the police complaints authority, you could do a judicial review application, and most recently there was the Todd Lampkin decision. And in that particular decision, I could give you the facts of that case. In that case, she was in a relationship with a man. They weren't married, but they had a child together. She went to the court several times for a protection order, and I believe a few times it was thrown out because the judicial officer was saying she essentially was just trying to fast track her application for custody, because she also made an application for custody of the minor child. When she went to the police station, the police officers didn't take her on and just sent her home. The same day they sent her home and she left the police station, he shot her and killed herself. Her mother went before the courts for constitutional redress, essentially. And to me, that's an amazing case where the judicial officer, I believe it was Justice Muhammad, ruled that the state has a positive obligation to take steps to protect persons in these positions. So the fact that the police officers didn't take steps to protect her violated her son's and her mother's right to family protection of the law, etc. The fact that judicial officer didn't give her protection also violated her right, and they ordered redress. At the time, the attorney general was senior counsel Reginald Armour, and he decided intentionally not to appeal the judgment because he accepted that the state has that positive obligation. So in addition to being able to get the redress in the Domestic Violence Act and go to a police station, etc., we also have a judgment saying that if the actors of the state, which includes the police officers, the judicial officers, etc., does not do what they have to do to protect a person, they are violating the rights of an individual.
What went on with this case? The initial stages, when she went to the station, mm-hmm. what happened?
So she went, there were several attempts by this young woman to protect herself. She'd made several applications for a protection order. As a matter of fact, on one occasion, she didn't appear. And the person who she made the application against did appear. And he told the judicial officer, well, she's not here because we make up. She no longer wants to pursue this. And the judicial officer essentially just threw the protection order. She made another application, and the judicial officer said, well, I don't think you're serious, you're just trying to fast track your application for the custody, because essentially trying to say that you're just trying to build evidence against this man to say he shouldn't have custody of the minor child. She made several applications. She went to the police station, and the same day she went to the police station, he also went, and they said, well, no, that's just a husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend things, you guys leave the station. And outside, she didn't even get home. And he shot her and killed himself. And you know what's actually interesting to me? In that particular case, I went to it was like a round table where her mother was talking. And the mother told everyone gathered there that when the police officers came to tell her that her daughter was murdered, The person that she was living in at the time abused her. Cuff her in her face. The same day police officers came to tell her that your daughter was murdered because she was also living in an abusive relationship. And it was only after her daughter's death that she left the home and went and lived in her daughter's apartment, her deceased daughter's apartment. So we also recognize and we also see sometimes how it is a cycle that is often, you know, continued over and over again. But when her mother revealed that to me, I was like, no way. Imagine having to deal with the loss of your daughter from an abusive relationship and your partner not even having the
compassion, the empathy, the emotion.
His response while the police officers were still there was to cuff her in her face. So it's a very complex situation and we can't throw judgment on the mother or anyone because you never know how difficult it is to leave the situation until you're actually in it. And sometimes you know how they can't, the whole point of domestic violence is kind of to break the person down, keep the person dependent on you. So at least that was a situation that allowed her to find her voice because she then went to the court and now we have this amazing judgment that says state actors have the positive obligation to do all that is necessary to protect individuals when they go to seek some type of help. Yeah.
Listen, so she got a judgment.
She got a judgment. Yes. Just to note, as I said, at this time, the Attorney General was Senior Counsel Reginald Armour, and he intentionally decided not to appeal it, essentially accepting that the state does, in fact, has this positive obligation. So it is an amazing judgment that will hold weight and will obviously be used as precedent. So if you go to a police station and you don't receive the redress that you need, we now have precedent to stand on to say you have to take these steps. And if you don't, sometimes you recognize constitutional actions are costly. And by that time, person is probably,
but
you know.
Not not to really play devil's advocate, but we have seen relationships. We know things go in Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah.
Even in the wider diaspora and even up the region, worldwide, relationships are very fickle.
Yeah.
You just hear them say, don't get in man and woman business.
Yeah.
Leave husband and wife alone.
Yeah.
You know? And you who carry the news is often be the enemy after.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's say it's your brother. You and I dating, your brother brings news. Well, you know, David, this and that, and me and you think, next, you know, we kiss and make up,
yeah.
And you tell me, well, you know, it's my brother, Anthony, tell me about this. And now, Anthony, why, you're a tattletale, or you're a snitch, and both of us now are vexed. We vexed with the man who brought news to say, to protect you, to tell you something, we know, two of us make up and turn. So we have this kind of situation in Trinidad where police believe that. Because you see women come back in the court and say, Your Honor, I want to drop the case. We make up. Are you under duress? Were you promised anything? Were you threatened?
Yeah.
She says no, and they go.
Yeah, but you see, the thing about it is domestic violence is an extremely complex topic. And I think that why it was important to create a specialized unit because they have to be trained to deal with persons in these situations. We have to remember that a person in this relationship who is currently being abused, the whole point, or at least the whole motive of this abuser is to break this person down as much as they can, keep this person dependent on them. So more than likely, probably told the person not to go out and work, I'll take care of you, which is a type of financial abuse. Or you have been abused for so long that you think that you don't deserve anything better. And you know, sometimes you feel as though you need to stay for the sake of your children. Sometimes some persons feel that type of obligation. So it's a situation where we have to be cognizant of the fact that these individuals may be experiencing these emotions in their head and provide them with the resources that they need. If the person wants to stay with the person and they want to make their relationship work, we should have resources available for them to seek counseling to deal with whatever issue may be causing them to be like that. If they want to leave, if I live with you and I have nowhere to go, how exactly am I leaving the relationship? When I go to the court and I get a protection order, what next? Where am I going to live? On the streets? We have to ensure that there's places for this woman to go and live. We have to ensure that this person with children have money to see about their children. So it's not just a hard and fast thing to say, just leave, because when you just leave, you also have to consider all the other factors that comes with that.
And that is for persons who live in a relationship where the abuser is hell-bent on continuously mentally or physically abusing people.
Exactly.
Hitting.
Yeah. And the thing about it is I grew up in a situation, not necessarily grew up, my mother left very early. And I don't lay any blame on my dad because I just think that as though the situation was just toxic. But I witnessed domestic violence in the home at a very young age. And I know how difficult it was for my mother to leave. My mother left and she built up a little thing in the back of her mother's house and went to a rural castle. At the time she had no subjects. When I was writing math, my mother had to stop doing lessons for math to pay for me to do math lessons. So I received my full CXC certificate before my mother.
Oh, she has it now?
She has it now, my
Congratulations
mother.
Congratulations to mom.
She's waking in the hospital up, but I'm saying that to say I have witnessed firsthand how hard it is for a woman to get themselves out of that situation.
So it was abuse from dad's side?
Yes.
Hitting mom.
I'm not passing any judgment on him because he is one of my favorite persons to this day.
No.
I think it was like a difficult, toxic situation for them to be in and they didn't necessarily need to be in a relationship with each other. So the best thing for both of them to do was to leave, which she essentially did. And it was difficult for that to happen. For me to be able to get my university degree, my mother worked 3 jobs in order to be able to afford it. So it can't just tell a woman, hey, just leave. When she have children to take care of, bills to pay, probably nowhere to go. All of these are factors that hinder a woman from just leaving. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, this topic is so broad. What about extramarital affairs and extramarital relationships? Is the act protecting of persons who engage? Because, all right,
mm-hmm.
So you're horning your wife.
Yes.
Or your husband.
Yes.
And the horner man or the horner woman has been, well, for, let me try and be diplomatic. Eh? The person that you are cheating with becomes abusive.
Mm-hmm.
Does the act protect you from those persons as well?
Yes, it does. And I think that persons don't necessarily know even a cohabitational relationship could exist if the person is married. So, you know, if you are married and your husband is having an extramarital affair and for a prolonged period of time, that could possibly be considered a cohabitational relationship. And that person possibly has rights on the death of that person. We could probably talk about that on another day. The Cohabitational Act doesn't specify that it needs to be a single man and a single woman. It just says persons who have been living together for that amount of time.
No, that's living. That's cohabit.
Well, if they could establish it.
If you could establish that your husband
mm-hmm.
was with this woman, the establishment could be made that this man and is married to you,
mm-hmm.
but he was with Sandra.
Mm-hmm.
You were married to him for 20 years, but 10 out of that 20 years, he was with this woman up until death.
Yeah.
So he living with you, home with you,
mm-hmm.
but he has his extramarital affair outside and he dies. She has a claim?
She has a claim. Once she can establish that there was a cohabitation or relationship that was in existence and there was actually a case, I could read that case and we could discuss it on the next occasion where I don't want to call her outside woman, the woman who had an extramarital affair with the man, she was going to seek her share of the deceased person's estate, even though he was married to this particular woman. The act does not specify that it needs to be a single. This is the cohabitational relationships aside from the domestic violence act. It does not specify that it needs to be a single man and a single woman.
Well, let's stop one, eh? I just telling Ollie, if Ollie engaging in anything, take all your time.
Yeah.
These people could come for your place.
Yes, and in the DV Act, it doesn't specify that it needs to be a single man or single woman either. It just said a dating relationship, visiting, etc., etc. So how it goes, you make the application. The person can make it themselves. It isn't a difficult situation. They could take the information over the phone or you submit the form via email.
Mm-hmm.
You get the date. The date is usually very soon. You go before the court. The court could let you give evidence. The person just explain what is happening. And once they are satisfied, you can get an interim order. Even if the person isn't present, as in the other party. No, even if the respondent who is abusing you.
Oh.
If he doesn't show up on that physical, because usually you make the application today, you get the date for tomorrow, the day after. It's usually quick because they recognize how serious
urgent,
the situation is. Yeah. And even if the person doesn't
appear in court,
they can make an ex parte application for the for the protection order, meaning essentially in his absence or in her absence.
And that goes out.
And yeah, and you could get an interim protection order saying the person has to stop doing that, etc., etc. But of course, the person has to be served in order for it to not really take effect, but for it to have any kind of weight.
Any kind of weight.
Yeah.
So if the magistrate decides to do ex parte and give you the application, the order of protection,
mm-hmm.
right? And you and they said Derek had to leave. No, I didn't say Andisa, but Derek,
right.
We just
so
talking.
I think it will depend on the circumstances of the case. They mightn't put somebody out of their home based on an ex parte. It all depends on how serious the situation is. But as I said, it is just an interim order. Essentially meaning it isn't the final order in the application. In that interim order, more likely it will have the further date, the next date of hearing,
mm-hmm.
and the person obviously would have to be served by then, and the person would be able to appear, and they would be able to give their evidence, and they would be able to give their side of the situation.
But based on your information and your experience so far, studying these cases, when these abusers are hurled before the court,
mm-hmm.
and they have to give their side of the story, is it that they admit that they're hitting these people? Oh, 9 out of 10 times they say no, they don't. And
sometimes they say they don't. Like I have represented recently it's someone who was making the application, mm-hmm. and recently someone who was defending the application. When you have your first initial conversation with them, they don't necessarily admit exactly what was going on, and sometimes you're taken by surprise when you go to court and you hear what the other person is saying. But in the act, it also makes arrangements for there to be undertakings by both of the parties. So even if the person accepts, hey, okay, I did in fact abuse the person on this day, I undertake not to do it anymore, I undertake to do etc., etc., and they can make that undertaken, and the court will move with that. So sometimes they do in fact just admit, you know, that they had a bad day and this happened, and they undertake not to do it anymore. Yeah.
The act of domestic violence.
Yeah.
As it relates to the law, all right? This is to give a protection order,
mm-hmm.
to a victim of an abuser, be it male or female.
Be it male or female.
But if this person has bruises, marks of violence on their bodies, mm-hmm. their eye black and blue,
mm-hmm.
from this abuser.
Mm-hmm.
When does it come to common assault? When does it reach the stage where it is now an arrestable offense rather than just a summary offense?
Yeah, so the thing about it is domestic violence is domestic violence. You could go to the court to get a protection order. That's one of the avenues that you have. But at the end of the day, if this person is sexually abusing you, physically abusing you, these are also crimes. So if you go to the police station and you make a report, they should act on that report that was made that an assault has happened in accordance with the Offences Against the Person Act, or there has been sexual abuse in accordance with the Sexual Offences Act. Even if this is a husband and wife situation, we also recognize that there are marital rape. So the police officers then have, I think, an obligation.
Rape is rape.
Because rape is rape, and an offense is an offense, and an assault is an assault. So in addition to the person could try to go to the court to get the protection order, but it is also a crime. And that's why I say sometimes we have the issue with the implementation, because it's not as though we need to create new laws to deal with the crimes on it. It exists. There are the acts in place.
Well said.
Yeah.
Listen, you're coming back next week. I want people to know Andisa and Davey is going to have a weekly feature. It's going to be on radio every Friday, and we'll try to lengthen it, especially in the 7 o'clock hour, as she will have caught in the last hour to prepare herself for. Yeah. My final talk with you. Can you elaborate when it comes to the Domestic Violence Act about the marital rape?
Right.
Because people believe, okay, we married,
mm-hmm.
so scripturally, your body belongs to me, my body belongs to you, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But does marital rape exist where a man can rape his wife that he's living with,
mm-hmm.
and can she rape him?
Yes, so it doesn't make any specification in relation to gender. That's one of the amazing things about this amendment. And the Domestic Violence Act explicitly recognizes marital rape. But as I said, in addition to that, these things are also crimes. So the Sexual Offences Act also recognizes that marital rape is a thing. So mm-hmm. you can, if you are raped within your marriage, you could go and get a protection order. Yes, fine. But you could also go and make a report to the police station and say that this has happened, and they should act on it. And as I said, if you feel as though you aren't getting the records that you want from the regular police officers who aren't specifically trained to deal with these kind of things, there is a gender-based violence unit. And I personally think that they do an amazing job in trying to address these things. And they are specifically trained and the sexual offenses unit, the sexual victims unit, they are trained to deal with these things. So if you feel as though you aren't getting the recourse at the by the regular police officers, go to these special units and tell them what's happening, and they will take the action that is required.
So can a woman rape a man?
Yes.
How?
Well, I mean, the thing about it is you will have to go to trial and prove it if it's a crime. But these things happen. She could drug a man. I know it will be difficult to conceptualize a woman raping a man. But these things happen. It aren't just men. I mean, the statistics show that men are the persons who...
Are mostly the aggressors.
But there are situations in which a woman could also rape a man.
You know, I often think about it that way. And, I mean, here had to be in it for there to react.
Mm-hmm.
In men, women is quite different. So mm-hmm. When you talk about, you mentioned the drug aspect. So let me take this call quickly and we wrap this segment this morning. Hello, good morning, quickly.
I'm on the every morning to the guest. Mm-hmm. I don't think a woman is what you're saying, right? But how a woman get an erection in the first place? If I don't really turn on to you, you're not appealing to me. How that happening?
Yeah.
You understand?
The logistics of it is a bit different, but our legislation recognized that there are circumstances where a man could come and say that a woman was raped by a man. It would just be a matter for both part, well, the prosecution and the defense to prove and put forward their evidence. But we can't rule out situations where a man has been
raped by a woman.
Yeah.
Because when you look at the drug inducement, I mean, mm-hmm. if you drug someone to get a reaction from their body parts and so forth,
mm-hmm.
and then in a incohesive state, you carry out acts of sexual activity on this man. When he recognizes himself, when he comes to, he recognizes maybe he's bruised or something is happening. He didn't give consent to this.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I feel as though we're not recognizing that rape is about consent. Like, that's the big thing in rape. So even if you go out with somebody, you willingly went out on a date with this person, you're on your way back home, you're in the room, but for some reason, you just decide you no longer want to go ahead with this. And you say no. At that point, even if you were in the middle of that, can you stop and you say no, I no longer want to do this. And the person insists that you continue. That could also be considered rape.
What? We in the middle of the brangers and you just stop midway and tell me no?
Exactly, because in the middle of the brangers, I said no. So there's no longer consent there.
No. What are you doing, man? What are you doing, man? We in the middle of the...
Rape centers around consent.
I love that. Men sometimes get an erection when scared. All right, frightened.
I don't know the logistics of
Well, we in medically trying to formulate that right now. Andisa, thank you so much for passing through with us
thank
this morning.
So
this is definitely going to be a staple conversation and segment. Every Friday, we look forward to the law and you. And how you can apply it and understand it. We take a break. Your news at the top is up next. Andisa has caught. So she will not be with us in the next hour. Have a good one, guys.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.